Okay, we begin here with the Mishnah on Kuf Gimel or Aleph. The Mishnah says, Almanah Shamra, Yef Shila Zuz Mibet Bali. If an Almanah, a widow, says that she does not want to leave the house of her husband who has passed away, Eino Yorshim, Yorshim meaning the Yatomim, the children of her husband, they could be her children as well, but more likely they came from another wife, they can't say, Yocholim Lomar La Lechide Beit Avicha, Anu Zonim Otach. They can't say to her, go back to your family, and we'll provide you the Mizonot. There's an obligation on the estate to provide Mizonot to the widow as long as she remains unmarried, it doesn't collect her ketubah. They can't dictate to her that she return to her father's house and they'll provide mizonot. Part of that right is to stay in the house that she was in prior to this point in time and then remain with the yatomim and collect her mizonot in that location. Ela zaninota v'notlim la mador lefi kvoda. They have to provide her mizonot and they also have to give her a place to live that is in accordance with her stature, meaning that the way it was before her husband passed away, that's the same way she should be treated after her husband passes away. Amra efshi lazuz mibeit abba. If the woman says, I don't want to remain in my husband's house, I don't want to remain with the yatomim or the yorshim, I want to go back home, I want to live with my family, and I want you to send me the mizonot over there. If she makes such a demand, yicholim ha-yorshim lomar la, im at etzlenu, yesh lach mizonot. If you stay by us, you'll get mizonot. If you don't stay with us, you're not going to get mizonot. So the Gemara will discuss why it is or what's the difference whether they give her mizonot where she is or they give her mizonot while she's living with them. If she makes a claim that the reason she's leaving is not because of her own personal interests, but because it's inappropriate for her to stay in that location, for instance, she's young and the children are also young, and therefore it would be inappropriate for her to live with them, then they do have to provide mizonot for her and her father's house, because then it would be unacceptable or inappropriate that she stays with the yatomim, and therefore she has the right to make such a demand that she get her mizonot in a place that she can live comfortably and safely. So Tana Rabbanan, mishtameshet b'madur k'derach shemishtameshet b'chayei ba'ala. The woman can use the living space or the house that she is residing in the same way she used it while her husband was still alive, meaning that everything continues in the status quo. Nothing should change for her. And now we're going to see a list of things that the Braita notes that won't change from the time that her husband passes away and will continue the same way they were when her husband was still alive. One of those is to utilize the house. The other one is Abadim Ushfachot Kederach Shemishtameshet B'Chayei Ba'ala. She can use the servants and the maidservants of the household the way she did while her husband was still alive. Bikarim V'Kistot Kederach Shemishtameshet B'Chayei Ba'ala. And she can use the pillows and comforters that she utilized while her husband is alive. She can continue to utilize them in the same manner or fashion after her husband passes away. B'Klei Chesef U'Klei Zahav. Similarly with the silver and gold utensils that are found in the house, she can continue to use them after her husband passes away. Shekach katov la, as the Gemara has done a number of times with regards to these laws, it shows the definition of what her rights are based on what's written in the Ketubah. And over here, the language of the Ketubah indicates v'atei yadvat b'veiti, that you can stay resident in my house, umitzanam nechsai, and you will take mizonot, you will take your sustenance from my possessions, from the estate, as long as you are a widow living in my house. So the Lashon HaKetubah says that as long as she remains in the house, then she's entitled to her mizonot and her ability to utilize the house, because it says you can stay in the estate or in the house, and to her mizonot in that location, as long as she remains a widow in that house. And that gives us the definition of everything we've seen so far in the Mishnah, as well as in this Braita. Tani Rav Yosef, now Rav Yosef is Mdayik from the word Beveiti, Beveiti, Falo Bebikati. It's true with regards to a house, but not with regards to a small or narrow space. Rashi says, Bait Tsar, very narrow space, gains Srif, like a hut of sorts. That doesn't qualify in terms of what they can grant her. So that's what Rashi says here, Imayamadur Shalo Tsar. If he has a very small estate or residence, he doesn't count on expelling his own children in order to provide a residence for the widow. So if all that's left over is this small, narrow house, according to Rashi, then the woman is not entitled to displace the orphans and stay there. And therefore, her right to stay in the house is terminated because there is no house available. That's where Yosef is Medayik from the Lashon HaKetubah that says, Biveiti. And that's Rashi's view, that this is a penalty or something that causes a diminishment of the rights of the woman. Other Rishonim, like the Rivan, on the other hand, says that it's actually an increasing of her right, which is that if the Yorshim want to make her a special location or house that she can stay in, then it doesn't suffice to provide her a Bikat. She needs to have a full-fledged house, like she was living in, Lefi Kvoda. That goes back to the Mishnah, when it says that they have to provide her a Mador, Lefi Kvoda. There are some Rishonim, like the Rashba and the Ritva, that believe the Almanah is only entitled to a room or locations or part of the house, not the entirety of the house. But other Rishonim disagree with that and suggest that she has full entitlement to use the whole house. That's what we saw in the Braita, that the usage of the house is similar to the way she used it prior to her husband's passing away. And that's full utilization. That's not just using a specific room or having a specific location. And that would be then supported by this view of the Rivan again, that they can't push her into a Bikat instead of being in a house because it says Biveti, that she has the right to stay in her house. So Rashi learns it from the side of the Yorshim's rights, whereas the Rivan looks at it from the perspective of the rights of the woman not to be displaced from the house. So Amar Rav Nachman, Yitomim, Shemachru Madur Almana, Lo Asu Velo Klum. So Rav Nachman, based on what we've seen so far, comes to the conclusion that if the Yitomim, the Yorshim, go ahead and sell the widow's residence, nothing has happened. The transaction is null and void because they didn't have rights to it. She is entitled to it through her ketubah, and therefore their sale of it is inappropriate, or they don't have the rights of ownership in order to sell it. How is this statement of Rav Nachman different than what we've seen from Rav Asi in the name of Rabbi Yochanan? If the Yitomim went ahead and monetized the estate when there was limited assets available, when there are limited assets available, we saw earlier in the Masechta that the banot are entitled to mizonot from the estate, and the boys have to be mesavei b'al p'tachim, have to go and collect and knock on doors to get staka, meaning that we give priority to the daughters over the sons in that situation. So that means that the estate belongs, in essence, to the Yitomot, to the young girls that are there, the banot that are entitled to mizonot. And therefore, you would have assumed if the Yitomim go ahead and act on that and sell it, that that should also be null and void because they don't have rights of ownership. Yet, Rabbi Yochanan says, mashemachru machru, whatever they did, whatever action they took, stands. So my answer is there's a difference. Hatam lo mishtab de lo mechayim, hacha mishtab de lo mechayim. It's a difference of when the ownership right took effect. The widow's rights stem from her tuba, which is in existence already prior to the death of her husband, and therefore she has, number one, rights, as well as a lien on the residence prior to his death. And therefore their rights at the time of the death can't supersede her existing lien or existing rights to the residence. And therefore if they take action, their action is null and void. On the other hand, with regards to the girls, the true inheritors of the estate are the boys. The Chazal, based on the Ketuvah, gave them a right to take from the estate the girls in order to protect them and take care of them and have the boys go around collecting tzedakah. But in essence, the real ownership belongs to the boys, meaning that the girls' entitlement is only a takanat chachamim that takes effect after the death of the father, and therefore they have no lien or real rights in the assets. It's just a demand on the Yitomim to do what the chachamim said. Therefore, if the Yitomim ignore what the Chachamim said, they still have ownership rights, sufficient ownership rights to sell it, and therefore they're able to sell it, even though that's not the right thing to do, and it's not the proper way to behave. Others suggest that Mishtab de la Mechayim means that the woman already was in place or in the house prior to the death of the husband, meaning that she's already utilizing it before the death of the husband, because the rights of the daughter should be no more or no less than the rights of the widow through the ketubah, because they're both the takanat chachamim. And if that's the case, why should the daughters be distinct from the woman? Elim Kane, you say that the woman already took possession of it prior to the death of the husband, and therefore the yitomim can't disgorge her from that location. Amar Abaye, natinin madura manash nafal, eno yoshim chayavin livnoto. Rabbi says that we have a mesorah that with regards to an almanah whose location where she's resident collapses or falls apart, that the Yorshim have no obligation to rebuild it for her. Now that assumes that they had built her a specific location or special house where she would be resident, therefore it falls down, they don't have to rebuild it for her. And that's because her rights existed only on this location, and there's no need or there's no obligation to provide a replacement. Now, majority of the Rishonim believe that even though they don't have to replace the house, or they don't have to rebuild the house, they still have to find her a place to live. They still have to provide her with accommodations. The Meiri brings down other shitot that suggests that even that they do not have to provide, that her zchut is terminated with the loss of the house. And therefore, not only do they not have to provide her a new house, they don't have to provide her with any accommodations at all. There's a limit to what they have to provide for her. But obviously, if she's living together with the Yatomim, which would then be that the Yatomim are going to rebuild the house for themselves, if they're going to do that, then it would assume that they'd have to do the same thing for the Almanah as well, since they were already rebuilding what was existent for them, and they did not designate a special location for her to live, then when they rebuild it for themselves, she'll have that same entitlement or same right that exists. Tanya Nami Ochi, we have a brayta that supports that contention of Abaye, Madur Almana, Shinafal, and Yoshim, Chayvim, Livnoto. Vlood, and not only that, Elafilu, he omerit, Henichuni, Vevnenu, Mishali, leave me and I'll build it out of my own assets. Ein Shomimla, we don't listen to her, meaning that she doesn't have a rights to the property, because the right granted to her by the Ketubah, which is a similar reason for what the previous halacha was, is the right to live in the house or the estate that exists. It's not a right of residence in general. It's not a right to the property. It's simply a right to remain in the house of the deceased husband. And therefore, if that ends or ceases somehow, then she doesn't have any entitlement after that point in time. Baye baye shipsa mai. If out of her own assets she upgrades the house, or she improves, or she does renovations on the house, which cause the house then to last longer or to stay intact longer, what's the din there? Do we say then that she's entitled to stay because it's the same residence that her husband once lived in? Or do we say that the renovations or the improvements cause it to stand longer and it's as if there's a new house here and therefore she doesn't have an entitlement to stay? We would just measure it based on how long the house would have stayed or been in use without those improvements. The Gemara leaves that as a teiku, as an unresolved issue. So Amrei EFG, she says, I don't want to stay in the house of my husband who passed away, and I want to go back home and send me my mizonot. Why can't they send her mizonot? What's the detriment to them if she doesn't reside with them? It sends them mizonot. As if she was living there. They should provide her the mizonot as if she was living together with them and just provided in this other location. So when it says, Misayle Rav Huna, this helps or supports the contention of Rav Huna, the Amar Rav Huna, Birkata Bayit Biruba, that the bracha of the house is increased by the number of residents that are there. So the way Rashi explains this, Bnei Adam Shozrim Zedzeh, when you have a number of people together, there is symbiosis that exists. There is the ability for each one to pitch in and to make a difference. And therefore, Mistakrin, Umazal Derabim Adif, they make more money, they are more successful, because they have more hands on board, and therefore they're able to do more. There's a 1 plus 1 equals more than 2 when you have numerous people in the house. In addition, Rashi says the mazel of the rabbim is adif. When there are more people involved, the mazel is then increased or does better because it's for the benefit of more people rather than a single individual. That's the way Rashi explains it. You can see in Tosafot he brings from the Rabbeinu Chananel that Perish Rabbeinu Chananel, Kedod Amina, Ner Achad, Ner Lemeya. Rabbeinu Chananel says that the Birkat Dabaya Bruba is with regards to items or utilities that suffice one or 100, meaning that when you put on a light in a room, it's the same light that is being used if you have one person in the room, if you have 100 people in the room. And the same with many other items that have to do with the fixed cost of a household or utility of a household. If you're putting on the air conditioning for one individual, it's good enough for everybody who's found in the house. And therefore, if you were in two houses, you have to pay for two different air conditioning, whereas in one house, you don't have to pay one. So there are certain assets, utilities that are sufficient for multiple people, and therefore you have savings based on that. Others, like the Rivan, suggest that it's just about economies of scale, that when you buy in bulk, when you buy in larger numbers, there's savings in that, and therefore there's value that's created from living together. So the Yatomim can say to her, if you lived with us, it would be to our benefit, and it would cost us less to provide you with mizonot. So the Gemara says, V'leduvab k'fi birkat habayit. So let them send her the value of her mizonot, subtracting from that the added value that is created by them living together. And the Gemara says, Ochanami, ain't Ochanami, that's what the Mishnah meant. Mishnah meant not that she doesn't get mizonot at all at her father's house, she'll just get a reduced value of mizonot based on the reduction. Now for the Rach, And for the Rivan, who explain either that's economies of scale or that it's near Achad, near the Maya, that makes sense that you can have some sort of calculation as to what the detriment it is from her not living together with them. And that detriment, they'll subtract from the value of Mizunot that they send to her. On the other hand, for Rashi's, which is a little more amorphous or intangible item, that Mazel Derabi Madif, or that they are symbiosis from everybody helping each other out, or they make more money by working together, that's something that's maybe a little harder to quantify and would be harder to explain in this context of how you subtract that from the value of the Mizunot that they send her. But again, the Gemara is saying that the Mishnah didn't mean that she doesn't get Mizunot at all, just that she gets a reduced value of Mizunot. Amar Avuna, Lashon Chachamim Bracha, Lashon Chachamim Osher, Lashon Chachamim Marpeh. That the Chachamim's rulings, not when they're speaking about those specific items, but they're telling you a halacha. Embedded in the halacha, the way that they express it, teaches you other values or other things. For instance, there's halacha, which we have here, which is Bracha Hadamran. Like in our situation here, the Mishnah teaches you that the Yatomim can refuse to send a Mizunot to her father's house because of the fact that there is a Birkat HaBayit. So the ruling of the Chachamim is that the Yatomim can refuse to send it to her father's house, or they can send it with the deduction for the Birkat HaBayit. But from that you learn that there's a value of having more people in the house, and with more people in the house, there is a Birkat HaBayit. So you learn Agav, as an aside, you learn this from the Chachamim, meaning that embedded in the Halacha is also this additional value or advice that they are giving to you. Osher, about wealth. It's not a mocher peirot l'chaveiro. Person who's selling fruits or produce to his friend, mashach velo madad. If he did mishchicha, he made a kinyan mishchicha on it, but did not measure out the amount. Kana, the kinyan is complete because the kinyan was done. And the medida is just the technicality of how to separate out the amount that he's entitled to. Madad velo mashach. On the other hand, if they measured it out, but there was no mishchicha, kinyan mishchicha, lo kana. And the seller can back out of the sale if they haven't had a kinyan mishchicha yet. If this person is intelligent or is a good business person, socheret mikomo, he rents the location where the items are found. So now whether that's because it's a situation in which there's too much produce and therefore a kinyan mishchicha is not realistic, therefore they're telling you to rent the place so that you'll get a kinyan agav, since you own the property and your item, the item now that you're buying is sitting on your property, that creates the kinyan. Whether this is a way to do it, if there was no kinyan mishchicha, you could still rent the location to then lock in the price and the transaction. So it's giving you advice of how to make sure in a business situation that the seller can't back out of the transaction, because you need to make a kinyan. So if you don't make a kinyan mishchicha, then rent the location in order that it will give you the rights that the seller can no longer back out because the kinyan is already completed, even though the medida, the measurement, is not done. That's about osher. Again, that's a halacha about kinyanim, but through that halacha of kinyanim, it also provides advice on how to be a good businessman. Marpeh, ditnan, we have the Mishnah. Lo yelos adam chitim. Person shouldn't chew on wheat kernels. Veniach agabe makato bepesach. And he shouldn't put it on top of his wound on Pesach, rumination machmitzot, because the saliva, together with the crushed kernels, then will ferment, and that will cause a rising or chametz. And because of that, you can't utilize that salve on Pesach. But as an aside, you learn from it that chewing on raw kernels is good medicinally for someone who has a wound to place it on top of it. So again, here you have a locha that has to do with Pesach. As an aside, you also learn with regards to rifuah. Now the Gemara goes into a segue, which seems like a non sequitur, and says, Tanabanan, b'shat p'tirato shel Rabbi, at the time that Rabbi passed away, and then the remainder of this daf and tomorrow's daf, we'll deal with this issue of Rabbi's passing away and all the items that surrounded that. So at the time of his death, Amar Levanaya Nitzarich, I need my children, I need to give them my last charge. Nichnasu banav etzlo, his children came in to see him. Amar lehem, hizharu b'chvodimchem, you have to be careful with regards to the honor of your mother. Ner yehei daluk bimkomo, he then commanded that a candle be lit in his place where he usually sat, shulchan aruch bimkomo, and a table be set where he normally sat, or the place on the table where he normally sat, mitatei mutzate bimkoma, and the bed made for where I normally lay down, whether that's the mitah for the eating, the beds that they leaned on in order to eat, or mitah means the place that he slept, but all of that should be kept intact, and we'll see why in a second in the Gemara. Yosef Chofni v'Shimon Efrati, heim shimshuni b'chayai, they serviced me while I was alive, And they will also service me when I pass away. Now, it's not clear who these individuals are. Yosef is probably Rabbi Yossi, one of the Rabbi Yossis in Shas. And then Shimon Efrati is not clear who that's referencing to. But Rabbi says, since they were dedicated during my lifetime, they will also be dedicated at the time of my death. So now, according to most, the connection here is with regards to Rabbi's command, with regards to their children, that they provide kavod imchem, that they provide kavod to the mother after the death. And that's the reason behind our Mishnah here, which is that the ketubah provides for the widow after the death of the father, that she's allowed to stay in the estate, and she's allowed to utilize it the way she utilized it before, which has to do with the kavod of the mother, meaning that the yorshim, the yitomim, have an obligation to ensure or take care of the mother. And for that reason, some say that that's the connection between the previous Gemara and this introduction of this story about Rabbi's death. Now, according to many of the Rishonim, the Yerushalmi over here has a slightly more detailed instruction with regards to what will happen after his death. And in that instruction, he says that the mother should not leave my house, meaning then it's exactly a continuation of our Gemara, which is that lo tazuz amanoti mi beiti, which is the same as our Mishnah that says that the almanah has a right to stay in the house based on the Lashon HaKtubah. And the reason you would need such a tzava is strange, because it's already in the Ketubah. It's halacha mefureshet. Why would Rabbi have to tell his children to do that? That might be because Rabbi is the Nasi, and therefore his house is seen as a public asset or a public place. Maybe his wife shouldn't be entitled to use it after his passing because he's no longer the Nasi. So he comes to dispel that and say that she still has entitlement. That's with regards, at least according to the Yerushalmi, that would make it even a more clear connection between the two. So now the Gemara is going to go through each one of the tzivuim that Rabbi gave to his children. He's haru b'chodimchem, that you should be careful with the honor of your mother. Doraitai, that's a mitzvah that say min haTorah, dichtiv, kabedet avicha v'etimecha. So Gemara says, eishetav havai. It wasn't their biological mother, it was a stepmother, it was his wife. Eishetav nami doraitai. The eishetav is also a din doraita, detanyo, we have a braita, kabedet avicha v'etimecha. The word et is a riboy. And therefore, et avicha zo eshet avicha, et imecha zu bal imecha. So et avicha comes to include somebody like your father, which is your stepmother. Et imecha, your mother, there's something included like your mother, and that's the husband of your mother. Vav yetera, and then the extra vav in the pasuk, kabed et avicha ve et imecha, rabot et achicha agadol, to include your older brother. Now, whether it's only the oldest brother or older brother is machloket in the Rishonim. And the Gemara says, Animile mechayim. That's only when they're still alive, avalachar mitalo. But after their death, that's not the case. Meaning that the derivative of avicha is eshet avicha, your stepmother. That means that the honor owed to your father then is also prescribed for the stepmother. That means it's only because of kavod that you have to give to your father that you must also give it to your stepmother. So the honor owed to the stepmother is not inherent, but rather because she is the wife of your father. And the same thing with bal imecha, it requires kavod because of imecha, because of the honor that you owe your mother. Therefore, you also have to honor her husband. So therefore, step-parents are owed that respect as long as the biological parent is alive, because through them, that's what makes the demand for kavod. And therefore, if they pass away, it's no longer necessary to give them kavod. And Rabbi was saying, despite that fact, you should give kavod to your stepmother. And even though sometimes in the Torah we find the word aim used to refer to a stepmother, nevertheless, that might only be in instances where the individual brought up the children as if they were her own children. And therefore, it's called imecha in that context. And therefore, it's not included by kabedet avicha v'et imecha, except to the ribui of et. Maybe in instances where the stepmother did not bring up the children. And the question as to whether this is a din doraita or a din derabonon is a machloket in the Rishonim. Rishonim like the Rambam that believe that Eshedav and Valaim are bin Torah, whereas Achiv HaGadol is only midirabanan. And there are others like the Meiri who suggest that it's all midirabanan. And it also seems pretty clear that the honor granted to the older brother is not connected to the parents being alive or not being alive. It might actually be more necessary when the parents pass away. That's a discussion for the sugya of Bechor. And that also has the question mark as to whether it only applies to the oldest child or the Bechor, whether it applies to an achot, a gedolah, to an older sister. and whether it applies to all older siblings, or only to the oldest sibling, all of those are discussed amongst the Rishonim and Achronim as to what exactly the obligation is here. So then, Rabbi said, why did he have all of his accoutrements put in place if he was already passed away? Because Kol Beis Shimshei, Eri Erev Shabbat, he's to return home. One Erev Shabbat, Ben Ashmashot, a neighbor came, Kakaria Abava, she was knocking on the door, calling inside, Amra Amte Shtiku, the one of the maidservants of Rabbi's house said, be quiet, keep it silent. The Rabbi Yotiv, Rabbi sitting there, came into Shama, once the word got out that he was coming back, Shuvlo Ata, he then didn't come back at all, Shalolo Tzilaza Tzadikim Arishonim, in order not to cast aspersions on early Tzadikim, who didn't return after they had passed away. Now over here, the Rabbi Kiva Eger quotes from the Sefer Chassidim, that Vaya Nira Bibigdei Chamudot Shailovish B'Shabbat, that he used to show up in his clothing for Shabbat, Puteret the Rabbim B'Kiddush Hayom, and he used to make Kiddush for his family, V'lo K'shar Meitim Sheheim Chofshim Mitzvot, not like other Meitim who are released or have no shaykhut to the mitzvot, ki atzadikim chayim upotrim bikidush. And therefore, since the tzadikim are considered to be alive still, they still have shaykhut to the mitzvot, and therefore they're able to be motzi other people in kiddush, as he quotes from the Sefer Chassidim. The Marsha over here notes that since Rabbeinu was known as Rabbeinu HaKadosh, it was appropriate for him to reappear or to show up on the Beis Shimshei and Erev Shabbat, which is a Zman that is Kadosh. And therefore, the reason he showed up every Erev Shabbat was connected to that aspect of Kedusha. The Maral in the Chidushei Agadot over here mentions that he doesn't think that Rabbi showed up in his flesh and bones, meaning in a Chumri, substantive way. Rather, there was just a sense that he was present to those that were there, meaning that his Neshama used to return to the house every Leil Shabbat. And similar to the Marsha, he notes that the Erev Shabbat, or Knesset Shabbat, is a Zman of Kedusha, and it's a time that is very spiritual, and therefore people have their antennae up, and they're able to sense more spiritual things, and because of that, they could sense the presence of Rabbi at that moment in time, and that's enhanced also by the Neshama Yeterah, which gives the person a more elevated spiritual side, and at nighttime, which is also a better time for Ruchaniyut, or appearance of spirituality. And therefore, all of those combined together made it that that was the apropos time when they sensed Rabbi's presence. And then, from the Kabbalistic side, there are those that suggest that tzaddikim have an appearance that is not a physical appearance, but is similar to their physical appearance. And sometimes they appear to others in that form, spiritual appearance, but has a liking to their physical appearance. And then, of course, there are others who just take this as allegorical in nature. And that is that Nero Dolek is that the aura of his Torah should continue to shine. Shulchan Aruch means that the Talmidim should continue to learn his Torah, or his contributions to the Torah, like the Shulchan Aruch itself. And Mitzvato Mitzuet is that the Talmidim should benefit from his wealth and continue to learn Torah with his sponsorship as well. Okay, Yosef Chofni, which Rashi says, the mean Chaifa from the place, Shimon Efrati from the place Efrat. That it meant in this world, meaning that they would be the ones that carry his mitah, they would be the ones who led him to the grave. But since they saw that they predeceased Rabbi, they were already deceased by the time Rabbi passed away, that Rabbi meant that they were going to service him in Olam Haba. So then why did Rabbi have to tell anybody about this? Why is that relevant? Because then people might have thought, since they predeceased Rabbi, that there was something wrong with them. And until now, they were kept alive by the zchut of Rabbi, but now that Rabbi passed away, they also passed away, or they passed away very close to his death, because he could no longer protect them, and therefore people would say negative things about them, or think negatively about them. Therefore, he suggests to people that they were worthy of accompanying him, just like they accompanied him in this world, so too they will accompany him in the world to come. He says, I need the Chachamim. Nechnu etzlo Chachmei Yisrael. He brought in all the Chachamim. Amar lehem, Al tis biduni b'ayarot. Don't give me eulogies in the big big cities. Now, their kfarim are the villages, the ariot are the big cities, and the krachim are the metropolises, the bigger places. So, one command he gave them was that they should not give hespedim in the ayarot. And you should start learning at 30 days after I have passed away, then you should stop engaging and eulogizing and start learning again. Or possibly that they should set up a learning by the grave of Rabbi in order to be Aliyah l'Nishmato. Shimon b'ni Chacham. Shimon, my son, is the wisest. Gamliel b'ni Nasi. Gamliel, my son, should be the Nasi. And Chanina bar Chama, Yeshe Baro, should be the Rosh Yeshiva. Now the Gemara is going to go through each one of these items. Altis biduni v'ayirot. Don't eulogize me in the cities. Sover mina mishum tirchahu dekamar. He didn't want to trouble the people, meaning that the people of the cities, if they did that, would then have to cause all the villagers to come and appear in the cities because they'd be nearby. And therefore, it would be a lot of work for them to set up hespedim in every city. And then it would also be a burden on the bnei akfarim who would have to come out to hear these hespedim. So Rabbi didn't want to make that tircha. That's the way Rashi explains it. The other possibility is that it would cause delays in his burial because they would have to do all these hespedim along all the cities. And therefore, it would cause a delay. Or in Yushami, it actually explains that the problem was that they were afraid that the cities would argue about which city would be the proper city to go, and that would be the Torah. Or the other possibility is that the bigger metropolises wouldn't be upset at the cities for staging these eulogies along the way. And therefore, for all of these possible reasons, they thought that that's why Rabbi instructed. But then what they saw was, Kevan dechazi dekabamas sabte bekrochim. When they saw that they were doing these hespedim eulogies in the large cities, Bekata Kuli Alma, and everybody ended up coming, Amrush Mamina Mishum Yakruhu Dekamar. He wanted to do it for honor. And the question about honor here is interesting because Rabbi was known as enough, as a person who was very humble and had tremendous humility. So then why is he worried about the honor? Here the Marsha points out, since this has to do with Kavod HaTorah, Rabbi couldn't be Mochel al Kavod HaTorah. He could be Mochel on his own Kavod, but since this has to do with the Kvod HaNisiyut and the Kvod HaTorah, therefore he didn't have a right to be Mochel on it, and therefore he demanded that there be the proper Kavod that was given to a Talmud Chacham, to the Torah, and to the Nisiyut. And that might be, by extension, something that teaches people how to act with other Talmidei Chachamim, and therefore he didn't have a right to be Mochel because it would affect others in the future, or it would affect other generations who would not properly be Maspid or take care of their Talmidei Chachamim. Hoshiva Yeshiva L'Achar Shloshim Yom. Set up the yeshiva or start learning again, because I'm no better than Moshe, Rabbeinu. That they cried for him, they had avelu for 30 days. For 30 days they had eulogies and they had crying for day and night. For 30 days and onward, either they had the eulogies during the day and then they learnt at night, or they had the eulogies at night, and they learned during the day, until they completed the 12 months or the year afterwards. That might connect to the kibud av ve'eim, which is that a parent who passes away, the child is obligated to keep a velut, mikvod av, kvod eim, for 12 months, for a year. And since Rabbi was considered to be a Talmid Chacham, Rabbi Shel Kol Yisrael, and therefore, just like a Rabbi and Talmid have a relationship like a father-child, so too Rabbi, who was the Rabbi Shel Kol Yisrael, so everybody was considered to be his child, and therefore was appropriate for 12 months, for a year, that they kept the avilut in his honor. On the day that Rabbi passed away, anybody who was there at the time of Rabbi's passing is guaranteed to go to Olam Haba. So Tosfot over here already asks, doesn't everybody have a portion of Olam Haba? What's the chiddush that everybody with Rabbi gets Olam Haba? That means it's a straight path. Do not stop at go. You go straight into Olam Haba without any din, without any isurim. Meaning it's a green light to go into Olam Haba. So it's a much easier way to get to Olam Haba rather than the promised Olam Haba that belongs to every Jew, which only comes after possibly din and isurim. How koves? There was this launderer, Kol Yoma Hava Atikamei. Every day he used to come to Rabbi. Hayom Aloata. That one day he didn't show up at the Rabbi's house or to Rabbi's shiur. Came to Shema Ochi. After he heard this, Salik Leigra, Benafel Ara. Went up onto the roof and fell down, umit, and died and passed away. A lot of times when this expression is used, it's to infer or to suggests that it was suicide. Over here, this language is a little more passive, and it doesn't make so much sense in the context of the Gemara that he committed suicide, but it might be that over the fact he was so distraught that he fell off the roof, or he lost his balance and fell off the roof, and he died. Yes, the bat kol, and then a heavenly voice came out, Amrav hu koveis, mizuman hu l'chayelam haba. Also, this person, this launderer, is also mizuman l'chayelam haba. Now, who this koveis is not clear. There are some that associate it with a koveis that's mentioned in other places in Shas, that used to hear Rabbi Shurim and reminded him of things that he said, and maybe that's the same koveis that we're speaking about over here. The Maharal over here suggests that obviously this koveis did not commit suicide, but rather that he was a rasha. He was an evil person who needed to fix his ways and to clean himself out, and that's why he was called a koveis, because he needed to kibusa nefesh, he needed to be cleansed out or properly do tshuva. And once he heard that he had lost out on that opportunity to get to Chayel HaMaba, that created a great awakening in him, and he did a full tshuva, and then through that tshuva, he reached to the highest height of Olam Haba, and therefore Igra, the roof, is representative of the ultimate destiny of one's life. And when he reached that point, his neshama left him because of the great tshuva that he had accomplished. Others suggest that he actually did commit suicide, and that suicide is only restricted when it's not done l'shem shemaim, where people are giving them their lives l'shem shemaim, or for something that's a greater cause that will be mekadesh l'shem shemaim. In that case, it is permissible, and therefore that's what happened over here. So, some controversy as to who exactly the koveis was that reached Olam Haba in this situation. One of the other tzivuim was Shimon ben Chacham, Maika Amar. What is that relevant for? Hachik Amar. Afal pishe Shimon ben Chacham, even though Shimon, my son, is the biggest Talmud Chacham, he's the wisest of my children, he's the one who's mimalei makom avotav with regards to Torah, Gamliel b'ni nasi. Nevertheless, Rabbi Gamliel should become the nasi. Amar Levi tzricha lemeimar. So Levi says about that tzivui of Rabbi, why did he have to tell us that? Isn't it obvious that Rabbi Gamliel would take over and not Rabbi Shimon? Amar Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi tzricha lecha umetal atach. What do we need you and your limp for? This is a reference to the fact that Levi did a kidah, this type of unusual acrobatic move in front of Rabbi to demonstrate how it was done in the Beit HaMikdash, and that caused him to be injured because of the pressure that it put on his hips. And the Gemara in different places says that Levi was also punished because of the way that he spoke Kapi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Gemara there says, Zebezeg Gorem, that Levi was punished because of the way he spoke Kapi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Hashem did it at a time when he was in a precarious position. And that was when he was demonstrating this kidah before Rabbi. So Rabbi Shimon Rabbi says back about Levi, almost in a cynical manner, when Levi says, why do we need Rabbi's tzivoy? Rabbi Shimon saying back, what do we need you, Levi, and your limp? So my kashale, what's Rabbi Shimon getting upset at Levi for? Levi's right about the fact that Rabbi didn't have to give us a tzivoy. Hakrak amar. Levi is relying on a pasuk that says, Et amamacha natan lioram kihu abechor. At Yoshafat, when he passed away, he passes on the crown to Yehoram because he's the eldest of the children. So it sounds like the age is the factor with regards to who is the inheritor of the crown or inheritor of the position of the father. And so too over here, the Nisiyut, Rabban Gamliel or Gamliel, was older than Shimon. And if he was older, then he, by definition, should have been the one who got the Nisiyut. And so why does Rabbi have to tell us that even though Shimon's a Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Gamliel gets the Nisiyut? So Gemara says, Ha'hu m'malei makom avotav hava. With regards to Yehoram, he stepped into his father's shoes. Since he stepped into his father's shoes, he was the person most appropriate to take over, and that's why he was chosen. Age is not the sole factor. It's a major factor, but that factor has to be tempered by whether the person is ra'oi, worthy of being the one who fills in his father's shoes. And the Marshal here points out that Yehoshaphat was a good king, he was a tzaddik, whereas Yehoram was a pretty evil king. And how do you say Yehoram was malei makom avotav? The Marshal answers something that has ramifications, which is it's all relative. That Yehoram was the best of the choices of Yehoshaphat's children. So not only was he the bechor, but he was the best option, even though he wasn't a great option. Which then has relevance to the way that the Gemara explains what happened over here, which is that Rabban Gamliel, Enu Malei Makom Avotav Hava. Whereas Rabban Gamliel did not fill into his father's shoes or did not step into his father's shoes because Shimon was more worthy than him because he was a greater Talmud Chacham. So the Gemara asked then, V'Rabbi my time Avot Hochi. So why did Rabbi do that? If the oldest of the children was Rabban Gamliel and he was not Memalei Makom Avotav, then why did he not have Shimon become the Nasi? It says, even though he was not the wisest of them, he wasn't the greatest Talmud Chacham, the guard's to his conduct or his midot, his fear of heaven or his fear of sin, that was something that was on the level of Rabbi. So he had aspects that were Mimalei Makom Avotav. Therefore, since he was the Bechor, as well as the fact that he had some things that were worthy of making him the Nasi, that was sufficient grounds to make him the Nasi. Similar to what we said before about Yehoram, that even though he wasn't the best fit for Yehoshaphat, but he was the best of the choices given the fact that he was the oldest, and he was the best choice out of the brothers. So it's over here, so Rabbi Gamliel, he is the oldest, and beyond that, he also has certain aspects of him that are Mimalei Makom Avotav. That's sufficient grounds then to choose him as the Nasi, or the one to be the Nasi, as well as the fact that it seems that Yirat Chet takes precedence over Chochmah. Being a Talmud Chacham is not the only requirement of the Nasi, may not be any requirement of the Nasi. Whereas Yirat Chet, someone who has fear of heaven or fear of sin, that's a more appropriate or relevant midah for someone who is becoming the Nasi. Now, with regards to Levi and Rabbi Shimon Barabi, Levi seems to hint to Rabbi Shimon through his statement of Tzricha LeMeimar that why it was that Rabbi didn't choose Rabbi Shimon. And then Rabbi Shimon's statement to Levi is pretty strong and somewhat difficult, because why is he mentioning the fact that he's limping? But that might have to do with the fact that they were hinting to each other what their position was. Levi, who said, why did Rabbi have to say this, was hinting at the fact that this was obvious because of the age difference between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says back to him, what do I need you and your limp? The limp was caused because of an action he took in front of Rabbi, both the fact that he spoke out of place, as well as the fact that he was doing this in the context of Torah. And so he's hinting back to him, Rabbi Shimon, that I'm more worthy with regards to Torah, and that should be sufficient grounds for me to be the Nasi. And then the Gemara then continues to say why that's not the case. But the interaction between them might have hinted at what their positions were, why they thought that that person was wrong. So then another one of Rabbi's commands was Chanina bar Chama yeshev barosh. He'll be the Rosh Yeshiva. Lo kibel Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina refused to become the Rosh Yeshiva. She'a Rabbi Epes gadol mimenu. Shtei shanim u'mechza. Rabbi Epes was 2.5 years older than him, and so therefore he deferred to Rabbi Epes to be the Rosh Yeshiva, and he didn't take that position. Yotiv Rabbi Epes bereisha. So Rabbi Epes became the Rosh Yeshiva. Yotiv Rabbi Chanina avrai. Rabbi Chanina was not kafuf, he wasn't subject to the rulings of Rabbi Epes, because he was probably greater than him in Chochmah and in Psak Halacha. So therefore Avrai, he stayed outside the Beit Midrash because he didn't feel that he had to accept the leadership or the Pesukei Halacha of Rabbi Epes. So out of both respect for Rabbi Epes, so that he would not defy him or would not argue with him, as well as the fact that he wanted to retain his independence, he learned outside the Beit HaMidrash. Vata Levi v'yotiv gabei. And Levi was then his Havruta. Nachnav shed Rabbi Epes. Then Rabbi Epes passed away. V'yotiv Rabbi Chanina bereisha. Rabbi Chanina then inherited to become the Rosh Yeshiva. V'alav Levi inish tametav gabei. So Levi now lost his Havruta. V'kata the Bavel. And therefore he went to Bavel. V'ainu damerle the Rav. That's what they said to Rav when they reported of Levi's presence in Bavel, even though he was in Eretz Yisrael. Gav Rabba Iklo in Nardo, a great Talmud Chacham just showed up in Nardo, Umitla, and he's limping, which is something we know is true of Levi, V'Doresh Kalila Shari, and he's Doresh, that on Shabbat, that a woman can go out with a type of jewelry crown. That's because the only type of people who wear that are women of stature, and women of stature don't take off their jewelry to show to other people, and everyone don't have to worry about her carrying it on Shabbat. Amar Shmamina Nachnav Shed Rabbi Epes. So Rav then intuited what had happened. The Rabbi Epes had passed away. Royati Rabbi Chanina Bereisha. Rabbi Chanina took over as the Rosh Yeshiva. Lo Ava Levi Inish the Meitav Gabei. And now Levi didn't have anyone to learn with. Bekato. And that's why he's now in Bavel. He came to Bavel then because he was looking or searching for a Chavruta. Vema Rabbi Chanina Nachnav Shed. How does Rav know that Rabbi Epes passed away? And it wasn't that Rabbi Chanina passed away, his Chavruta passed away. Rabbi Epes, Kiryativ Yotiv. Rabbi Epes, Kiryativ Yotiv. Vlavila Levi Inish the Meitav Gabei. And that's why Levi didn't have a Chavruta, Bekato, and that's why he came to Bavel. Tzibai Temin Levi the Rabbi Epes Mikaf Havakayif. That's because Levi would have been under the jurisdiction of Rabbi Epes. If that was the case, if Rabbi Epes was still alive, then he would have gone into the Beit Midrash and learnt under his tutelage, and therefore it can't be that Rabbi Yoffes is still alive and that Rabbi Chanina passed away. Since rabbis predicted that Rabbi Chanina Bar Chama would be the Rosh Yeshiva, it's impossible that he wouldn't have become the Rosh Yeshiva, because the tzaddik is gozer and Hashem is mekayim. It's written by the tzaddikim from the pasuk in Iyov, "Vatigzar Omer vayakam lach." The speaker is decreeing, "Vayakam lach," and Hashem, you make it happen. That's with reference to the tzaddikim, that they have the ability to dictate, and Hashem follows their dictate. Baba Rabbi Chia. What about Rabbi Chia? Why isn't Rabbi Chia the one who became the Rosh Yeshiva? Rabbi Chia was a Talmud Muvhok of Rabbi, and we know that he interacts with Rabbi on a regular basis, the stories in the beginning of Sanhedrin, and Rabbi Chia wouldn't have been the chosen Talmud to be the one who was Rosh Yeshiva. It says, Nachnaf Shei, he predeceased Rabbi. Baba Rabbi Chia, ani ra'iti kivro shel Rabbi, v'oreti alav d'maot. I saw the burial place of Rabbi, and I cried over it. So it makes it sound like that Rabbi predeceased Rabbi Chia. Epoch. The Gemara says, flip that. It was Rabbi who was crying over Rabbi Chia. And the Gemara is going to go through a series of these and give that same answer. Rama Rabbi Chia, oto ayom shemet Rabbi betela kedusha. On the day that Rabbi passed away, kedusha left the world. The Gemara again says, epoch. That's what Rabbi said about Rabbi Chia. Tosafot over here discusses the fact that, what does it mean that betela kedusha? Shayu korim oto Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Since he was Rabbeinu HaKadosh, when he passed away, kedusha was lost. Now, Tosafot quotes from the Mishnah at the end of Sota that says that when Rabbi passed away, Batla Anava V'Yira, that Anava and Yira were then lost. So it sounds like the character traits of Rabbi were humility and fear of heaven, and not Kedusha. So Tosafot answers with Eish Lamar, Kedusha Bichlau. Kedusha is either part of that, Yirat Chet and humility, or that Yirat Chet and Anava are subsumed under Kedusha, and they're really synonymous terms. But then, is an amazing statement, Rabbi Chaim HaKohen says that if he was there at the time that Rabbeinu Tam passed away, since Rabbeinu Tam was such a great Talmud Chacham, Hayiti Metamei Lo. Even as a Kohen, I would have gone to his Levaya, and I would have been Metamei for him. Ta B'Tela Kedusha. Because Kedusha is suspended when it comes to a leader of the generation that passes away. He explains Betla Kedusha means that the Kedusha of the Kohanim was suspended for the day that Rabbi passed away, and the Kohanim were allowed to become Tamei in the Levaya or in the honor of Rabbi. And he says that the proof to that is the statement over here. It says, Oto Ayom Shemet Rabbi. On that day, Betela Kedusha, implying that it wasn't a permanent state, it was a temporary suspension. That is a suspension of the Kedushat Kehuna. And those of us goes on to say that the Yerushalmi in Brachot makes it sound like that way, that on the day that Rabbi passed away, there was Ein Kehuna, there was no din of Kehuna on that day, which seems to support this view of the Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen. In the end, Tosafot rejects it and says that he doesn't think that Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen is reading that correctly, and that is the Gemara in the Yerushalmi in Brachot is only referencing to Tumat Derabanan of Tumat Beit HaPras, that is suspended with regards to the Levaya of a Talmud Chacham, or the death of a Talmud Chacham. But when it comes to Tumah Deoraita, that we do not suspend. And that has to do with the concept that possibly, that Tzaddikim, when they pass away, aren't really Niftar, and there's no Tumah associated with them. Therefore, they have Kedusha and Tahara, and that's why the Kohanim can be there and not worry about violating their din of not becoming Tamei, even though the way that the Rabbeinu Chaim HaKohen expresses it is that you're allowed to become Tamei. Nevertheless, conceptually, it's this idea that either the Tzaddikim are so great that it's worth becoming Tamei for them, or it's suspended to become Tamei for them, or the fact that they are so great means that they don't have Tuma, they have Kedusha. They have Tahara associated with them, and that's why it's not a problem for the Kohanim. That leads to some of the machlokot in the modern post-scheme with regards to visits to Maariat HaMachpelah and Kever Rachel by the Kohanim, where some of the poskim suggest that Kohanim can go there because they are not mitamei Kohanim, because they are tzaddikei olam, and therefore Kohanim have permission to go in there, whereas many other poskim believe that there is no suspension of the tumah of kuhuna, but there might be other reasons why Kohanim can go in there, because there's an oil on top of an oil which protects from tumah from coming up, and therefore based on that, they allow the Kohanim to go there. So again, the Gemara answered here, epoch, that it was Rabbi saying that about Rabbi Chia. Atanya, kashechala Rabbi nichnas Rabbi Chia, it's low. Rabbi fell ill. Rabbi Chia came in to see him. Matzo shehu bocheh. He saw that Rabbi was crying. Amar lo, Rabbi, ma ata bocheh? Why are you crying? Vatanya, don't we have a braita? Meit mitocha schok. Someone who passes away while they're happy or in laughter, siman yafelo, that's a good sign. Mitocha bechi, if he passes away while crying, siman ralo, it's a bad sign, it's a bad omen. Panav lamalo, if he's facing upwards, siman yafelo, that's a good sign. Panav lamato, his face is down towards the bed, siman ralo, that's a bad sign or a bad omen. Panav klapeyam, if he's facing out towards the people, siman yafelo. Klapeya kotel, if he's facing in towards the wall, siman ralo. Panav yirukim, siman ralo, if his face is pale or green in complexion, that's a bad sign. Panav suuvim, if his face is radiant, vadumim, and reddish in tint, siman yafelo, that's a good sign. Meit b'erev Shabbat, siman yafelo. Passes away on Erev Shabbat, that's a good sign. V'motzei Shabbat, siman ralo. On Motzei Shabbat, that's a bad omen. Meit b'erev Yom HaKippurim, siman ralo. That's a bad sign. B'motzei Yom HaKippurim, siman yafelo. That's a good sign, a good omen. Meit micholim ayim, siman yafelo. If he passes away from a stomach ailment, that's a good sign. Yipnei, shirubam shel tzadikim, mitadam b'cholim ayim. Because majority of tzadikim pass away from stomach ailments. That's so because it doesn't stop them from learning Torah. They're able to learn Torah and also is memarek them, cleans them out in terms of their need for isurim before they pass away. As well as the fact that it clears their goof out of any zuama that's associated with it. Now, with regards to the simanim here of the death of the person, none of them are really explained except the last three, one which the Gemara explains, and the two before that, Rashi explains the reason for that. That is, if a person passed away on Erev Shabbat, Shabbat is a Yom Menucha. So they go directly into a state of Menucha, and therefore passing away on Erev Shabbat is a good siman, whereas on Motzei Shabbat, right after the Menucha, and everybody's going back to Chol, and Gehenom starts working again, that's a siman ra that a person passes away after Shabbat. Pass away Motzei Yom Kippurim after the person has garnered kaparat avonot and has a clean slate, then that's an apropos time to pass away. That's a siman riofeh. Whereas on Erev Yom Kippurim, if he passes away before he has that opportunity to get the kaparat avonot, that's a siman ra lo. Whereas to the other items in the list, it's not clear. Although it seems to be that if a person passes away in a good state, that that's more positive, whereas a person passes away in a poorer state, that that seems to be a siman ra. That's what seems to be indicated by the statements beforehand. So Rabbi responds to Rabbi Chiya's question as to why is he crying. Ana Torah mitzvot kabachina. I'm crying because of the fact I'm no longer be able to perform Torah mitzvot. So one answer the Gemara is flip it again, and it was Rabbi asking Rabbi Chiya why he was crying, and the whole story is reversed. Don't flip all these stories. That Rabbi Chiya had other issues that he was tending to. Never Rabbi didn't want to take him away from that. Rabbi said, lo afkirei. I'm not going to stop him from what he's doing because that'll cause him to be mevatel from the great work that he's doing now. And therefore I'm not going to put the burden of the Rosh Yeshiva on him. V'hainu. And what is it exactly that he was involved with? Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chanina and Rabbi Chiya got into an argument. Rabbi Chanina, the Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chanina would say to Rabbi Chiya, "Bahadididi minzat, you're disagreeing with my position with me." Dim chas v'shalom nishtachacha Torah Yisrael. It was such a terrible situation in which all of Torah was forgotten from Klal Yisrael. Ma'adranale mipilpulei. I could relearn it, or I could recreate the Torah from my great erudition and my great ability to didact things from the learning that I have. So Rabbi Chiya answers back to him, I make sure that Torah will never be forgotten for you. So you say, if it's forgotten, I can take care of it. So Rabbi Chiya says, I preempt that, and I put the cure before the problem by creating a situation in which it will never be forgotten from Klal Yisrael. Datina kidno, I take flax seeds, shadina, and I plant them, gadalno nishbe, and then I grow from that flax, I take linen that comes from them, and I make nets, trapping nets from them. Saidena tavyo, and then I capture deer. Machilna bisra liyatme. Then I shech the tzvi, and I give the basar to orphans, or those that are needy. Varichna megilta mimashke de tavyo. From the skin of the deer, I make it into a klaf. Slikna lamato, delayed ba, mikre daidoke. Then I go to a city where they don't have any teachers for the kids. There's no cheder. Vekativna chamsha chumse lechamsha yonoke. And I write five chumashim, the five chumashim of the Torah, and each one of them I hand to a different child, five children. Manina shita sidre l'shita yinoke, and then I teach the six darim of Mishnah to six different children. The chokhad b'chad amre lay, and after I teach them that, I tell each one of them, atnei sidrach l'chavreich, teach the Seder that I taught you to your friend. Ainu dama Rabbi kama gdolot maseh Chiya. And that's what Rabbi says about Rabbi Chiya, how great are his actions. What he's doing is amazing. He's going around, he uses the nets that he makes to capture the deer to give food to the Yatomim, people that are needy. And then he takes the skins and makes them into cloth. And then he goes and teaches Chumash and Mishnah to those cities where there are children who don't have teachers. And then he teaches, tells the children to teach each other what they know. And through that, he makes sure that Torah is never forgotten from Klal Yisrael. And Rabbi's complimenting him on that. And Rabbi didn't want to make him the Rosh Yeshiva to stop this endeavor. So Amar Leih Rabbi Shimon Rabbi Afilu Mimcha. Is Rabbi Chiya even greater than my father, Rabbi? Amar Leih, in. Yes, he's even greater than me. Amar Leih Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi was also a peer of Rabbi Shimon Rabbi and Rabbi Chiya. Afilu Mimabo. He's even greater than my father, Rabbi Yossi. And Amar Leih Chas V'Shalom Lo Teyeh Kazot B'Yisrael. That I can't say. Rabbi Yossi was greater than him, but at least about myself, I can say that Rabbi Chiya is greater than me. Amaleim levni akatan ani tzarich. So then Rabbi says, I need my youngest child to come in. Nichnas Rabbi Shimon Etzlo, who is the Talmud Chacham, the Chacham of all of them. Masar lo sidrei chachma. Because he was Talmud Chacham, he gave him all the secrets and the wisdom that was necessary to continue on as a Talmud Chacham. Amaleim levni agadol ani tzarich. I need my older son. Nichnas Rabbi Gamliel Etzlo, who we mentioned before, became the Nasi. Masar lo sidrei nesiut. Therefore he gave him over the trappings, the etiquette, and the proper conduct as a Nasi. You should act as an Asi with Ramim. Rashi over here says Biramim means you should sit amongst the great ones, meaning that you should bring respect and kavod and stature to the position of the Nisiyut. Or Biramim means that he should bring honor to his position or standing, which means that even with great people or other wealthy people of the generation should not be machnif, he shouldn't be flattering towards them or trying to curry their favor. He should act as if there's honor and value to his position and maintain that sense of power over even those that are wealthy or powerful. But Zrok Marabat Talmidim, make sure that you put fear in the students. In that even though you're the Nasi and they're Talmid Chachamim, to make sure to instill fear in them so they accept your political power and that they are kafuf, they are subordinated to you as the Nasi. Ini, is that really true that the Nasi should act in such a fashion? V'aktiv, v'tirei Hashem yichabed. That those that fear Hashem, you should give honor to you. V'amamar. And the Gemara says, or darshans on that, Zeh Yoshafat Melech Yehuda, we mentioned before, was a great tzaddik. This refers to that Yoshafat, k'sheya ro'e tamil chacham ayomeid mikiso. When he saw a Talmud Chacham, he'd get up from his throne, umechabko, umenashko, he'd hug him and kiss him, v'korelo Rabbi, Rabbi, Mori, Mori. Call him my Rebbe, my master, my master. So you see the king of Yehuda giving deference to a Talmud Chacham. So why is Rabbi instructing his son, Rabbi Gamliel, as the Nasi, not to give deference to Talmud Chachamim and to subordinate them to him? So amalakasha, b'tzina, b'avrehesya. Depends whether it's done privately or in public. In public, the king's position, or the Nasi, who is also a position like that of the king, must maintain that stature of the position. And therefore, they're not allowed to be mochel akvodo, melech shemachal akvodo, ein kvodo machol, because that hurts the position itself. The stature and standing of the king is important. And therefore, the king can't, of his own volition, decide to give deference to anyone else, because the king himself requires a stature and standing in order to exert his political influence and be able to manage and rule over the people. So therefore, in any public setting, the king has to act in such a manner that is Zorek Marab Talmidim, that it shows his power and does not show any deference towards the Talmid Chachamim. But Sina, in private, there the king can show deference to the Talmid Chachamim. It might be even important that he shows deference to the Talmid Chachamim, because there it indicates that he is, like the Torah requires of him, to be subject to the rulings of the Torah and to counsel with the Talmidei Chachamim to give him guidance as to what the Torah says in these situations. So Yoshafat used to give respect to the Talmidei Chachamim in private, but in public he would act like the king and he would not give any deference to the Talmidei Chachamim in public. Because as the Torah says that you have to be som tasim alecha melech, shetei emato mutelet alecha, that the fear of the king has to be placed on you. I mean that part of the king's position is that the subjects of the king also respect the king and give him that power and deference. And so therefore he can't make an exception for the Talmidei Chachamim. And just like other people can't be mezazel in the kavod of the king himself can't be mezazel in his own kavod, because he represents the position or the station and not just himself. And therefore he's not allowed to be mochel al kavodo, so that there won't be any diminishment of the stature and standing of the king. And that's what Rabbi's instruction to his son, Rabbi Gamliel, the Nasi, was. Okay, we're going to stop here, two lines from the bottom of Kuf Gimel Amud Bet.